When you want to grow your business, use Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Seamlessly collaborate with your team using a suite of built-in tools and features to make your workday easier, like huddles to schedule impromptu meetings and avoid another calendar invite, or Workflow Builder, which lets you automate routine tasks so you can spend more time on the work that matters most. Slack. Grow your business here. Learn more at slack.com.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Yeah! It's all that you get. Josh and Antonio might be it, but heaven knows they'll try.
A Ted Lasso podcast on Post Show Recaps. You better believe it. Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk. I'm Josh Wigler, joined here by Antonio Mazzaro to talk season 2, episode 5 of Ted Lasso, Rainbow. Antonio, oh my gosh, the butterflies.
I thought this was a Wario cast.
Yeah, I did want to apologize first and foremost that our regular third co-host, Wario, as Roy Kent calls him, could not be here. He is currently stuck in on casino duties, as he is wont to do in the post-show recaps universe. If you'd like to find out more about a featured player on post-show recaps, Wario, in the post-show recaps patron experience, you can go to patreon.com/post-show recaps, F around and find out.
that's the link. Will,
yeah, that's not how it goes all the way, but you want to find out about our relationship with Wario, we could certainly do something about that. Antonio, Roy Kent, he's here,
Legend.
He's there, he's every effing where.
Legend.
He's back. Roy Kent. Unbelievable. What a time. I'm so happy. I know what I said a few weeks ago. Like, take Roy Kent off the show. Let him be happy. But this is happiness for Roy Kent, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. When you said it, you were right, right? Because it would not have been appropriate at that time. It would not have seemed right. Roy Kent had to decide that he was ready. The way he decided that he was ready and how that played out over the last, especially like 10 minutes or so of this episode, was fantastic. I loved it so much. I'm all in on Roy Kent. I'm team Roy Kent. And whatever Roy Kent wants, I think Roy Kent should do. And I'm so glad that what he wants is to be back at AFC Richmond, because it'll bode well, I think, for everybody else involved. Although, we'll certainly
everybody?
Suss out. Yeah, we'll certainly suss out to some of the people that it might not bode as well for. But
yeah,
listen, nothing sticks here. We'll it's Ted Lasso. We could get the next episode's probably going to be 6 months down the line and three people are going to be engaged. Who knows what's happening?
Yes. All right. So here we are. We're going to make ourselves big before we... is that you do that every time before you podcast, right? You like go into a room, you look in the mirror, you raise your arms up, you stand on your tippy toes, you scream, or some kind of noise like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, I do the opposite. I make myself very, very, very,
very
small.
Very small.
Yes, as small as I possibly can.
Small. Yeah. So we're going to get into everything Roy Kent. We'll get into what's going on with Nate. Nobody spit at your screens as we are doing this podcast. Please find another way to pump yourself up. We will talk about what's happening on the screens of Rebecca and potentially Ted. So much to discuss in this one. Free kicks as well. We're going to have a great time here. Of course, we want your feedback. TedLasso@postshowrecaps.com. You can send that in. You can also tweet at us. I'm at Round Howard. Antonio is at AC Mazzaro with how many Z's and R's?
It's a 2 Z's and 1 R situation.
It's a 2Z1R situation. Antonio, this episode, Rainbow, the rom communism is in full effect, sweeping the nation of Ted Lasso Nation, at least. What did you think of this one? Did it warm your cold, dead heart, Antonio?
Oh my. I would not like to be branded as such. It warmed, yes, the cockles of my cold, dead heart are fully warmed,
yes.
Josh.
Yes.
No, I absolutely love this episode, honestly. And
Honestly.
It is a situation, as I said last week, leading into this episode on this podcast, where I have learned to stop worrying and love the bomb, if it were, as it were. I've learned to stop worrying and trust the process of Ted Lasso season two. I'm in a place where I'm taking in the show differently, obviously, not just because we're watching it week to week, which I did not do for season one, but also because we're podcasting about it. So there's a lot of investment in these plot lines, or where is this stray glance going to lead, and what is intended in that. I don't need to necessarily have any of that delivered on. I am excited about watching the rest of this season and then thinking about all these various moments throughout, and how they stack up in the life of a character like Nate, for example, who very clearly over the course of these episodes is going through some things. Roy Kent, a good example. This is a signpost for Roy Kent, a big moment. But we have seen how this is sort of evolving, and we haven't seen any direct lines. It's just sort of like Roy Kent's unhappy. Roy Kent won't even talk to Ted Lasso. Keeley's pushing him in one direction. He doesn't want to go in that direction. Okay, now he's happy with that direction, but why is he still not coming to the match? Why is he still not there for all of his ex-teammates? And I think it had to be that Roy had to really let himself go and learn that it was okay to take on a different role within the game. And I think, obviously, being a pundit led him to that direction, but it was a process, and that process played out over a series of episodes. The other thing that's not lost on me, and I want to say this right away from the jump, that I've talked to you about it, but we know we live in a world where the reality of how this show was created is that they wrote a 10-episode season. They broke it out. They had all the stories planned out. This is going to happen in this episode, and this is going to happen in this episode, and so on. And they wrote the first three episodes thinking that they would air in a block. That is confirmed from people who have worked on the show. We've talked about it on this podcast. Those first three were meant to be watched the first week that the episodes came out. Then, before the Christmas episode ever existed, we were supposed to just go right into this episode. So there's a world where this is week two of Ted Lasso's streaming experience, season two on Apple TV. So
yeah, if this whole thing plays out exactly as the creators intend it, if this whole thing plays out exactly as the Diamond Dogs that are responsible for Ted Lasso had designed it, this is the second week of the show.
Right. This is the second week that we're engaging with the content. It's
because the Christmas episode isn't there. Right. And they released those first three in a single shot.
Right.
And so if the Christmas episode is gone, you get those first three episodes, you binge them. The next week, you get Rainbow.
Yep. And it doesn't seem like that long of a journey for Roy Kent under those circumstances. And maybe we say, like, well, yeah, there was some Nate stuff earlier in the season, but the last couple episodes, it hasn't been as prominent. Well, that's because the last couple episodes would have been aired at the same time the first week. Like, we have to be able to trust what these creators are doing. The other thing to consider, and I've said this a ton, and I apologize to anyone who's hearing this who has heard me rant about this, but it's a very difficult task.
Leave the Fountainhead out of it, Antonio.
It's a very difficult task to consider the Fountainhead. No, it's a very difficult task to write a TV show. It has to be in this environment where you know the vast majority of the people who will ever consume your content through time immemorial will do so in a binge. Like, the only time anyone's ever going to be watching this and waiting 7 days and watching another episode is, like, literally right now. Everyone,
or when Post Show Recaps inevitably does one of those rewatch projects that literally no one has asked for, but I can't help myself from doing.
Well, but even in that realm, I'm sure people are having a hard time just keeping themselves to the week to week. But you're right, like, that could happen. But the vast majority of the people who are going to consume this content are going to do so watching one after the other. It's just, that's how it's going to happen. That's the way the vast majority of us, and shout out to you if you're the special person who happened to watch Ted Lasso week to week in series one. I know you're out there, but the vast majority of the people who have watched Ted Lasso at this point did not do that. They consumed it in a binge.
It was the rolling boulder. Everyone found out about it, and like, it just was, when did you hop on? But that seemed to be sort of the process last year.
Right. And so I don't think it's necessarily fair for us to compare seasons one and two if we're not consuming them the same way, and until we've seen all of season two. So I think it's interesting to look at this episode in light of that, that this should have been the second episode of this season in terms of the one we saw in week two after having consumed the three previous. And I think when you look at it in that frame, the Nate stuff is much more of a through line. The Roy Kent stuff is much more of a through line. There are these emotional through lines. And I think it'll be interesting to trace Ted and Rebecca, if we're shipping them or if we're not, and where they're at both as individuals and together, in that lens, the way the creators intended, and probably later in a binge. So I just want to get that out of the way, because it really did occur to me in this episode that this should have been the second week, and it's not. It's the fifth week, and that feels very different as a result. And the whole experience is going to feel different because we're doing it differently. So I just wanted to get that out of there from the jump, because it does really impact the way I'm feeling about this. You ask me how I'm feeling. I feel great, because I feel better about Ted Lasso thinking about those things than I did when I was wondering, like, how could you like build up to this big climax with Dubai Air and then never mention it again? Right. I have a feeling it's going to get mentioned again. They followed up on a joke that was a random throwaway from season one in this episode.
What does a British owl say?
Whom? Exactly. Whom did that? Yeah. They did that. So,
and you, yeah. I had forgotten about it. So if you want to just remind people where that's from, you amazingly, serendipitously like wound up on this like about 2 minutes before we started recording.
Yeah. Season one, episode nine, which is the episode where Ted is struggling with what to do with Roy Kent. There has been a period of the season that we didn't really see play out in the course of the season that we find out about, where Roy has struggled after the Everton game. And we're in a position where Ted has to bench Roy, and Ted does not want to do it. He doesn't want to do it. Roy doesn't want to do it. But everyone else, including Beard and Nate, know that it needs to happen. Beard and Nate start giving Ted the cold shoulder and the silent treatment because he won't do it. And when they're outside, Ted is trying to talk to Beard. Beard moves away. So then Ted tries to talk to Nate. And the way he tries to talk to him, he says, "Nate, what's a British owl say?" And Nate runs away. So right there in that moment, Ted never finishes his joke. And then in this episode, Beard brings it back and they finish it. So that's 6 months later. And if that's 6 months later, what else could we reference, or what else could we do? I think we're going to draw more clear lines around a lot of this stuff that has been set up as potential sources of conflict that maybe hasn't bloomed yet, because we're supposed to be in week two. And we have a whole lot of season left to go. So I really think that I do trust the process. I think it's very interesting. I don't think it was intentional, but you know how this show goes, Josh, when it's not intending. Ted's speech to the team at the beginning when they're watching video, Ted says, "Our job is to have zero expectations and just to let go." That's what he says to the team. And I do wonder, like, is that what we're supposed to do with Ted Lasso right now? Should we not expect specific plot lines to be tied together? Just let go, watch the thing, and then say, okay, this is where they failed, this is where they succeeded, etc. How do you feel about that in this week-to-week podcast world?
I love it. You know, it's very freeing, because I feel like often, and especially a lot of the stuff that you and I do, like Mr. Robot is a prime example of just like when you and I would podcast about that show and go week to week, we were going from like mystery to mystery and like, how is this connecting to that? I think oddly, Antonio, and this is something, I don't know if we've talked about it on air, but I know that I've talked to you about it offline. So either I'm repeating myself here or saying something that has only been in a conversation with you and I, but like there's a way in which like I view Ted Lasso as sort of like another side of the same coin as The Leftovers, which was a show that Antonio and I talked about each and every single episode, except for episode 5, Don't Add Us. We didn't do that one. Just go from the episode 4 to episode 6 recap when you're going back and listening to The Leftovers podcast. We missed that one.
Sorry, Gladys.
And it's not lost on me that with that show, which was all about grief and how to process that and incorporate that into your life and how to like still find meaning and ways to move forward, and that being a show from Damon Lindelof, the one of the creators of Lost and the one who is most credited with frustrating the fans with all these unresolved nonsense items, that the core message of that show was reflected in its theme song.
Yes.
Let the Mystery Be.
Yes.
And so, like, I find it very funny that when I'm kind of, like, lensing Ted Lasso as a show that is at least a cousin of The Leftovers, in that they are both, very, very, very deeply focused on the human experience. Like, that's the connective thread. They come out in different genres and with wildly different content. Although if we see Ted check into some sort of international hotel, that could be very fun. Again, I do think that that's more of a Coach Beard thing. It's just not lost on me that like this idea of like our job is to let go, and how those two things thread together as sort of meta commentary. I find that fascinating. I find that exciting because usually, like, the job of the podcaster is we got to tell you what's happening. We got to tell you what's going to happen. And I love that piece of the job. Don't get me wrong. But, man, I do love just stopping and smelling the roses because them roses smell so good. Sometimes they smell like a rainbow.
Roses really smell like something else, I've heard.
That's true. That is also true. But I think in this case, for me, like, I just delight in Ted Lasso. And is there a world where I would have rather, like, crushed this season and just, like, gotten to this faster? Maybe, sure. You know, certainly, like, if that was the intention creatively, like, we got here quicker. Then I get that, and I would love to see the creative vision upheld. I think in some ways the show right now is very much a victim of its own success, which I think is, like, an admirable problem to have. That's, a very much, like, a high-class problem. I don't know, though. Like, I'm happy to have a weekly shot of Lasso. I'm happy to know that, like, at the end of every shit week that we've got here, at the end,
speaking of people not getting their shots,
you know, you get a tab of Ted. Like, yeah, I want that. So, like, I'm not mad at that. I'm pretty happy with this idea of, like, just let it go. But I also think, that one of the strengths of Ted Lasso has been, like, the ways in which it has surprised us. Like, I think structurally, like, to, like, talk about this episode specifically, like, it just did things that the show has never done before. It really, like, it was all the rom-com homages, you know, it's like the Harry Met Sally stuff, the breaking of the fourth wall, you know, the two people who are in the stands that speak directly to us, like, you know, very, very, you know, tropey and genre convention stuff that is just wielded to such great effect in this love story, not about, person meets person, but you know, this cosmic love story between athlete and sport, I think was really, really beautifully told. And for me, there's no world where you, like, guess that that's going to be the structure of an episode. Like, it felt very singular, it felt very beautifully realized, and the joy in talking about this stuff for me is, like, then you and I just get to get on a microphone and kind of bask in that stuff. But the fact that that is such, like, a left turn that you can't see that coming, it's still packed with stuff that is looking inside of itself and referring to itself. I think the British owl joke is a great example of the ways in which the show itself is not a goldfish. The show is not having that 10-second memory of just doing a thing and moving on. The show and the structure of the show, and the way that certain jokes feedback loop into itself, you know, look at the pay me $10 if I say in touch, you know, call outs throughout the very first episode of the whole show, and the way that that's just, like, littered throughout. This is a show with a memory. This is a show that remembers what it's doing. This is a show that answers the call when it puts the call out. So I feel very confident that there is going to be a lot that has been set up in the season of the show that is going to get paid off. But I think it's hard to call how. And that is beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be right. I want to be delighted like everybody else.
Yeah. And I love the basking. I don't want to come off as inglorious baskers. Like, this is definitely something that I want to celebrate for sure. And a rom-com is the perfect lens to, I think, approach some of what's happening in that. I do think some of the struggle is the show has trended into a little more high stakes territory in season two, with social commentary, and athlete protests, and some of those very specific elements and the way they were presented. And I think when you do that, it does make the goldfishing a little bit more difficult because on one hand, we can have the Dubai Air protest, and on another, the show is delivering Nespresso machines by the Nestle company, a horrible company. I know there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, but, like, this is a show where 10 seconds ago the team was protesting one thing, and the next episode this is happening. And I think that's okay because I really think it is about these thematic. I think The Leftovers is a perfect example because I do think it is about the personal. I do think it is about the thematic things that are evolving, the relationship relationships that are developing. That's where the secret sauce of Ted Lasso season one was. It wasn't that Ted's superpower.
The peri-peri.
It wasn't that Ted's superpower was winning people over right away. His true power was the stamina. He was relentless over time, and it broke people down, whether it was Roy Kent, whether it was ultimately Jamie Tart, all these people. Ted does have an impact, and the Ted Lasso way does ultimately work in some respects. And it's interesting to talk about that in the course of this episode. But the show itself, it isn't so much that it needs to deliver on high concept or extremely twisty plots week to week. It's that it delivers what it delivers by virtue of breaking you down over time with what it delivers in terms of the emotional content. So I think the emotional content is very specific and interesting to track. I think that's what evolves more specifically than the plot points. And I think totally. The plot points lead to the emotional content. And so that's why they're worth talking about. But Nate is a perfect example. Roy is a perfect example. I mean, let's start with Roy and get into it. We've been talking about Roy and Roy wanting to stay away from AFC Richmond. Why hasn't he shown up? Ted's leaving all these tickets under these country singers' names, which was, of course, paid off in this episode. We actually got the punchline to how that played out. But Roy has not really embraced the football in that way. He's not come back to the games. He's not sitting up there in the owner's box or anywhere around the team.
He's not leaning in on his Reba McEntire alter ego.
Exactly. He's staying away. And this episode presented it at first as though we could use Roy to help Isaac. But really what we did is use Isaac to help Roy. And in doing so, I think paid off on a lot of where we had found Roy Kent, where he was seemingly at peace. He was very entertaining. He was this like yogi who would like, you know, hovering above it all, presenting inch perfect advice to other people and just doing a fantastic job of existing in that world and not being with his first love, football. And I think this episode showed how that Roy Kent was not as evolved as we maybe thought, and that he needs this to feel complete in a way that punditry did not deliver. He needs to feel the growth that is football. He expresses things in this episode that Ted has expressed about why he loves coaching, having an impact on people's lives, seeing the way that the skill develops, getting better over time, those commitments that you make and seeing the payoffs for them. Those are not happening necessarily week to week. It's a baby steps kind of thing. So it's just fascinating to think about Roy Kent in that realm, and just the way we are taking in Ted Lasso in that realm, because it really does deliver in Roy's story this week. I'm so happy that he's back in like you said at the beginning of this, like he's back in a way that a couple weeks ago you said, I don't want that for Roy. I want Roy to be happy. But they managed to find a way to make sure that it happened in a way that we know this is what makes Roy Kent happy.
Yes. But I think the things that make you happy have a way of making you sad as well.
Of course.
You know,
yes. Like me with eating.
Yeah, like me with eating as well.
Like all of us with eating, I think.
That I think that you know, we have Roy more firmly back in the orbit of the show now. You know, I think it will take some arm twisting, and I'm sure they will certainly try to twist his arm, if not his knee, into calling him a diamond dog.
Yes, you know? He's not done like, growling, right.
You know, like that stuff is still going on. But he's in it now. He's in the hub of things like Cassandra. And I think that for Roy, what that means is that thing that I was really rooting against is let this man live his life. Let him be happy. Let there be no drama surrounding this character. And I'm still hopeful that for the vast majority of it, that, I think that can be upheld between Roy and Keeley. But I think that Roy being in the game, being a coach on the team, two out of three of the current coaches seem great with this, and one of them seems decidedly not, in Nate, who is obviously a very important person on the show, and specifically in season two. Has like a really important storyline this week, you know, gaining his confidence and figuring out what's his version of making himself big, which involves just spitting at himself in a mirror, and just like serial killer stuff.
Yes. Henry.
And, you know, and then like him, you know, trying to get that table for his parents, and trying to find like, What's his thing? Is it putting on a suit? Is it this? Is it that? I'll talk to Isaac. Getting literally laughed at. This person who is the first person, the first image of the season is Nate, is this character who's obviously massively important to what's going on this year, that it is not lost on me that when we're getting that big rainbow return to form for Roy Kent after that incredible journey from the station, from there to becoming Coach Kent on the field, that the music, that Rainbow specifically, I don't know if that's how the song goes, but there is distortion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
You know, but it's like perfectly timed. Yeah. Like it is not sitting well with Nate.
Purposefully timed.
I am very nervous about what that means in terms of certainly for Nate, because that's a character I care about a lot, and that's somebody whose well-being I'm concerned for. But I'm very nervous about how that relates to Roy. So like, it's an electric feeling. There's butterflies. It is all the things that you want to feel when you fall in love. But when you fall in love, there's inherent risk and danger there too. And so I think we are now in this moment where it's the warm glow of Roy Kent being where he ought to be, but where he ought to be is still a pretty dangerous place. He's been nervous to like get hurt again, and I think that there's like some inevitability of hurt that could be on his way. So I don't know. I feel a lot of feelings about it, is my point.
And I feel that same way too. And you're right to highlight all the Nate stuff, because it's fascinating that when Roy is at his happy place at the donut kebab shop, he says to Ted, like, I'm good at my job. Like, he says, why won't you let me be happy? Why won't you let me be happy? He says to Ted. And Ted doesn't say, like, you know, Ted's sales job to Roy is pitch perfect this episode. Not to suggest another rom-com, but it is pitch perfect in this episode. And Roy decides what makes him happy, not Ted or anyone else. But you take Roy's why won't you let me be happy line and you put that over Nate's face at the end of the episode, when Nate has showed up in the confident suit and he's feeling himself, he's you know, high on his own supply, he's ready to rock. Coach Nate, he's here. And then what as those discordant strings play over his face, it's definitely a why won't you let me be happy moment. And we don't know what will happen with Nate. One thing we haven't seen over the course of what I'm just going to call the 2 weeks of Ted Lasso season two so far, is Nate the Great. We haven't seen Nate be what Nate was in season one, which is he did have a talent, whether it was for designing plays, whether it was for recognizing what players needed to be told or why they were performing poorly. Maybe his talent wasn't so much in the roasting of it all, like how he was delivering it, even though that was fun. But he definitely had talents that were rightly recognized and that showed him to be something more than just this meek, milquetoast, kind of easygoing pushover guy, which is what emerges when the talent is not on display. And that's the Nate we've mostly seen this season. And he definitely overcorrects. We see the overcorrections in this episode. Yelling, it's Shelby and you know it, you dithering kestrel. Just spitting at the mirror. All the things that Nate has done. That's the overcorrection of Nate that we often see. So we have not yet seen Nate in the sweet spot that Roy Kent seems to find himself in after having gone through it, after having tried and succeeded or tried and failed to be happy. We have not seen that for Nate. And it's surely that moment is coming, but what will we go through before we get to that moment? It seems like it could get worse before it gets better, for certain, because we just have had a lot of stuff with Nate. I mean, we talk about how Ted puts Higgins in Nate's office without asking Nate. We had Nate the bully emerging a lot more with poor Will over the course of the first few episodes. What we haven't seen is Nate doing well, and I think that is obviously coming. It will be nice when it delivers. I hope it's delivered in as triumphant a moment as we see Roy's moment in this episode. Surely it will be. There will be opportunities, certainly. We thought maybe the opportunities would come with Jamie Tartt specifically, because they always had such a contentious relationship. Now it feels like maybe Roy will usurp some of that Jamie Tartt energy because they too had such a contentious relationship. So where Nate fits, I don't know, but I do feel like the upward swing is coming, and we will trace back to all these moments, whether it's the office, whether it's the bullying of Will, whether it's what happens in this episode, that we'll trace back to all these things and say, this was Nate's journey in season two. This is how it paid off. They did a great job with it. Shout out to Nick Muhammad. Shout out to everyone involved. Like, that's where we'll be with Nate by the end of the season. I'm confident in that. But we're certainly in a rough spot right now, for sure.
Yeah. I loved while you're at it, give me your number. Like, no.
Yeah.
Like,
selling beyond the clothes.
Yeah.
Nice try. Yeah. And she said, I'm picky. And we know from Nate's discussion of the Banter app that he is picky as well.
He's also picky.
Yeah, maybe that makes them a good match. I mean, maybe that's not the last we've seen of Jade. Who knows? But that was very funny. I do think it's fascinating that this was such an up and down episode for Nate, but at the core, maybe he just wanted the table, but I feel like what he wanted is what he expressed to Keeley. Can you make me famous? That seems to be what Nate has wanted. Recognition. Remember when he burned his sunglasses?
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. He burned the sunglasses. That was his very important item because when he was wearing them, a woman once told him he looked like Clive Owen when he was wearing them. Like he craves acceptance. He craves adulation. He has not received it. And so that is the interesting thing about Nate is like that is probably not what he needs, but if that's what he wants, it'll be interesting to see how those two things relate over the course of his story.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by it. The idea of like Nate the celebrity and then like trying to like manufacture that, like that is like there's so much danger there that I'm in terms of like some of the conflict that could be coming our way in the future of the show, cuz we've seen like moments where like his like reading people the riot act like worked out and like it was the thing that people needed. But then like there are those moments where, you know, he has the outburst, where, you know, like Keeley and Rebecca are like too far, rein it in. And like in the wrong company, in the wrong context, like I'm concerned about that for Nate. So I'm interested. I'm really interested to see where that goes. And I really loved his storyline this week. I thought it was wonderful. It was great to like kind of get some insight into like his relationship with his parents and everything like that. So that was all really, really great.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We should talk more about Roy. He's so great in this episode. Whether it's like him calling out Wario or him like getting his favorite chicken kebab place ruined.
Yeah.
Or him lurking in the shadows like freaking Batman with the mag light on underneath his chin. I put it out there on Twitter this week. I think Brett Goldstein should be Wolverine. I think that he is the... And I think they should just make Wolverine British. And I think that they shouldn't change a thing about Brett Goldstein. He should just play Wolverine like Roy Kent, and that's how you follow up Hugh Jackman. That's what I want out of I came to that this week. Like he has these moments where he growls at the kid on his way. Like Brett Goldstein and the oft told story about how he won the role of Roy Kent and really advocated for himself and put himself on tape and pushed for it. Thank God. Just an absolute revelation. He is so good. This character is like such an excellent character, but like it is so hard to imagine it in the hands of anybody else. Like he's just such a in the way that Sudeikis is so singularly Ted Lasso, I feel like Brett Goldstein is so singularly Roy Kent.
It's funny because I'm not an X-Men guy, but one of the things I was shocked to learn about Wolverine, strangely enough, through like a serialized Canadian? Marvel podcast, not Canadian, tiny. He's tiny.
Yeah.
He's like, what, like 5'2 or something, right? Like, he's a small man, but he looks so fierce and so, like, large. And Brett Goldstein does a fantastic job physically with Roy Kent. Brett Goldstein, also not like a huge guy, but
he's 5'10.
Roy Kent somehow manages to fill up the frame. Like, it's the posture, it's the way he holds his arms out when he walks, it's the shoulders as he expands. Like, Roy Kent has this physical presence, and he always has. And so maybe Brett Goldstein could pull that off. Like, a littler guy who could make himself look bigger.
I'm gonna tweet at Jimmy Fallon and see what I can't do.
Please, that's never a good idea.
No, it worked out for me once. You know, let's see if I can't do it
again. Never a good idea. Never a good idea. Resist that urge to tweet at Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, sure.
No, do what you want, Josh. Do what makes you happy. That's what Ted Lasso would say, and I think that's where it should go. I love the Roy Kent. I just loved the way that this evolved. It was so perfect. Like I said, it's interesting to me that the way it's presented, right, is there's a problem with Isaac. Isaac is trying to be Roy Kent. He's trying to be gruff. He's screaming at his teammates. There's no fun in it for Isaac. He is trying to be hard. He's trying to replace Roy Kent's shoes. Instead of being Isaac and doing what got Isaac the armband, he's being Roy Kent. And that is not something that everyone can pull off. Clearly, Brett Goldstein is the guy. So Isaac is doing this, and we need a Roy Kent to solve a problem. Ted presents this as, I don't have a clue what to do. He says it to the doc, like, I know exactly what it's going to take. But then as soon as she leaves the room, Ted says, I don't know. You know, normally I just tell the captain to talk to him. And it's like, well, okay. So that's ultimately what he does. He gets the captain. He gets Roy Kent. But the way he does it is just so perfect. Like, he does it in a way that it makes it feel like it's Roy's idea. Like, when they're at the kebab shop, Ted basically says, no, I don't need you to coach. I just wanted you to talk to Isaac. You know, and then Roy, oh yeah, he's in his own head, isn't he? Like, then all of a sudden, Roy is a little bit more on board with it. Ted walks away. He doesn't sit there at the place, and he doesn't burden Roy with anything else. He doesn't bother him. He lets Roy think about it in his own mind. This all evolves. Ted doesn't even know the details about what's going to happen, seemingly. He just has him show up. It all works so well for both Roy and Ted that it's just, I think, a perfect little breadcrumb trail, whether intentional or not, to lead Roy back to football. And I wanted to bring that up as a way of talking about Ted, because we've seen Ted fail a couple times this season, or we've seen his ways really get called into question, where it's like, is this a good idea? Like, Ted's kind of being a dick here. Like, what is he up to? Whether he intended it or not, this was a perfect way to get Roy Kent back on the team. It was a perfect solution for what the team needed in terms of getting Isaac fixed, but also getting Roy back into the mix. This was missing. You complete our team, Ted says to Roy in a callback to Jerry Maguire. For those of you who appreciate that film, congratulations to you. Not one I like, Josh. I don't know where you are on Jerry Maguire.
On Jerry Maguire, yeah. I can mostly quote Jerry Maguire chapter and verse. When I was a young lad, for whatever reason, I glommed onto that movie hard. I was way too young to see what Tom Cruise and Kelly Preston were doing.
Yes, never stop effing me.
Yes, what they were doing was intercourse. And
what they were doing was each other.
I memorized like the movie. So there's a lot of I don't think I have it on instant recall anymore, but there are certainly scenes that I did not know this.
This is a weird character note for you.
Yeah.
Unexpected.
Yeah, I'm not going to start getting into it right now.
Are you a Cameron Crowe guy overall?
Not really. No, it's this and Almost Famous and certainly not Elizabethtown.
What, did you buy a zoo
not
at any
Aloha,
point? Oh, I forgot
I
about Aloha.
I did not buy a zoo, and I did not buy a zoo.
I am hard out on Cameron Crowe, so this
sure.
is this
enough.
Is interesting to
Fair
me.
Enough.
This is interesting Fair to enough. Me. But Vanilla Fair Sky, enough. Also hard out.
Oh, yeah, Vanilla Sky. I watched that for the first time like 4 years ago. Freaked me out.
You called for tech support?
Help.
Yeah, this is a nightmare. This is not a nightmare, though. This is just Ted says Roy completes the team, and he gives him a little bit of a pitch, but it's up to Roy. And then Roy comes to it on his own. It's his epiphany when he sees Isaac out there happy and celebrating. And he's asked to comment on how he thinks a 17-year-old will do in their debut in the league. And Roy gives it the perfect podcaster mantra, right? Like, he is speaking from my soul. And he basically just says, like, we're on the outside looking in, judging them. This isn't what I'm meant to do. I have to go. It made me want to run into a writer's room, Josh. Like, it made me want to speed headlong with my trick knee away from podcasting forever. But we are pundits in this game. Neither of us is the asshole ex-coach of Richmond, though, at the very least.
Yes. No sign of Hall & Oates this week, too, which is good.
Oh, there's the other one.
I really think
that this was, whether it was Ted's plan or not, it was perfectly executed. And I think it does speak to the lasso way does work. Like, we have had reason to call that into question, chief among them being the record of the team. But at least in this respect, Ted's methods were superbly effective, and I think they delivered exactly what the team needed. Maybe individuals within the team aren't going to adjust to it well. We see with Nate, but I do think that this is evidence that Ted is not a complete charlatan, that some of the things Ted says and does are actually truly effective, very important. And even though Ted is saying he has no idea what Isaac needs, he knew exactly what Isaac needed, and it turns out he knew exactly what Roy needed. So maybe Ted isn't so ridiculous after all, and maybe the Ted Lasso way will work, and maybe it is up to us to wait the rest of the season to see how this plays out.
Yeah. All that being said, like, I am still worried about Ted and still tracking this poor guy.
Oh, yes.
Ongoing battle with depression. I thought the hallway scene,
yes,
with Ted and Sharon was excellent. Because I felt really uncomfortable for, like, not the first time necessarily, but in, like, a pointed way, I felt really uncomfortable with Ted's lassoisms.
Yeah.
You know, the way that he is just, like, goofing off and just, like, goldfishing through, like, every possible, like, attempt at insight from Sharon, and just, like, refusal to look deeper into the window of his own heart, was really pointed to me. I'm concerned about this guy's well-being, and I think that this episode really did a great job of pushing that story forward, which I think is undoubtedly still really clearly a critical, not just plot line, but obviously character journey for if not, you know, just the season, but the show overall. Like, I'm glad that Ted got the win that he needed here in both getting Isaac back on board, but also getting Roy onto the pitch and part of the staff. That's fantastic. I expect they won that game.
Yes.
You know, but, like, there are other battles that he is still struggling with that he himself needs a Ted Lasso type to pull him out of.
You're really right, I think, to flag that. It makes me worried about what it is going to actually take. If the losses or the draws, the failures on the field didn't do it, if that's not it, like, what is it going to take for Ted to seek the help that he clearly needs? He all but admits to the doc that he's under pressure. He does it in a goofy-ass way, and he does it in a way that is trying to control the scenario or all the interaction with humor and, like you said, all the goldfishisms and pushing things away in a way that is absolutely awkward. The doc knows this. She's doing her own version of Ted with Roy. Like, she's doing the slow play. Like, my door is open. Like, you can come to me. Like, I'm ready. Like, whenever you need help, I know you're under pressure. She said as much to him in the first episode. Like, heavy hangs the head. I think it's the second episode. Like, heavy hangs the head that wears the visor, right? Like, she knows he's under pressure. She's witnessing him in all these rooms. She's witnessing him tell the team, like, our job is to have no expectations. Like, our job is to not expect any result or any outcome. And you can easily imagine what it must have been like for Michelle to be in couples therapy with him, right? When this is his behavior, this is the way he handles conflict or problems, is he's goofy about it. He jokes about it. He tries to be upbeat and positive about it. Sometimes you have to come to Jesus, or in this case, at Dr. Fieldstone. And I do think that that is coming. I just worry for Ted and for the show. I mean, I don't think it's going to get too dark, but I do think, considering what we saw in season one in Make Rebecca Great Again with Ted's panic attack, in Liverpool, I just feel like we're going to get into that territory again and probably worse than before, because it's going to take something to get him into the area where I think from the beginning we said he's going to be, which is in Dr. Fieldstone's office, talking to her, really exposing some of the things that make Ted tick and that really make his that impact his worldview. Some of the times when season one is at its best is when that's happening. Those moments are coming. It's just a matter of when, not a matter of if. And I think you're right. That hallway scene really typifies this. Doesn't in a subtle way. They don't linger. It's a scene that probably lasts no more than a minute and a half tops.
Oh, yeah. Sharon's doing that classic therapist thing where she knows what's going on.
Yes.
Like she sees the heart of it, and she will wait a full freaking year for Ted to come out with it.
Yes. You know? She diagnosed him the minute she met him. Right.
She won't bring it up.
Yep.
She won't do it. She'll try to get Ted to get there, but if Ted doesn't get there for 2 years,
she'll take her $150 an hour.
She'll wait for Ted to say it before she says it. Yes. That's the tactic. And like, it has to happen. He has to get there, you know, and she can only do what she can to, you know, not quite lead the way, but maybe like illuminate the way to a certain degree.
In the way that Ted did with Roy, illuminating his own face with Isaac.
one of my absolute favorite shots of the whole show.
They were both terrified, too. That was hilarious.
It was so good.
Isaac jumps behind Ted. Or maybe it was Ted behind Isaac, but either way, very, very funny. Like, very funny. Classic Roy Kent.
It was really nice to spend some time with Isaac as a character.
I agree. We got his catchphrase, Macadoodle Doo. We saw him celebrating the five-a-side, which is, by the way, this is the football that's being played there. It's a very popular game in the UK, especially the way that that's played on a smaller pitch in an enclosed space. With the smaller goals, with less people on the field, extremely popular recreational activity. Love to see that get worked in. Love knowing that that was part of Roy Kent's origin story and part of his coping mechanisms as a player was to get back to his roots. There are people from different countries that have different versions of this. People in America now are still playing futsal. Like, that's a thing that is growing in popularity, which is very similar. It's sort of an indoor version of a smaller version of soccer. I know a lot of kids are playing that now. Extremely popular in South America. And it leads to a different kind of play style. When you grow up playing like this, you have to be much more efficient in space. Instead of kicking the ball into an open area and then sprinting for it, you really have to learn how to do some of the tricks that Isaac was doing in this episode, where, you know, you're fainting, you're doing a lot with your hips and your feet. It's just really fun to watch. I thought the football looked excellent in that scene where they were doing that. So it was really fun to see how that played out. I thought that was a great way to bring Isaac back to what he loved about the game, because it was presented as such a fun thing to see people playing that way. And I know that people love that. So that was great. I like you, love spending time with Isaac. It wasn't Isaac on a throne, is the Secret Santa purveyor, but it was nonetheless probably the most we've got to know about him as a character, or really sit some time with him. And I think season two, I think when we were putting down our flags for things we wanted to see more of Sam. We wanted to see more of Danny Rojas, and we wanted to see more of some of the other people on the team, and we're doing that already. We're doing that, so it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a show that is so character focused and character driven, and the characters that we've really got to know in season one, I feel like we know them. We very effectively got to know them. And I think season two, it's not that it has like ground to make up or anything like that, but like it has the space.
Yeah.
You know,
the opportunity.
It's got the room to do that.
Yeah.
So I was really, really thrilled that we got to see so much from Isaac. So before we like really shift gears to some extent, at least, is there anything else from like the storylines we're talking about right now that you want to dig into before, I don't know, I need to check what's on who I'm messaging with on Banter.
I think that's where, as long as you're using Banter and not Tumescent, I think we're in a good place. Not that Tumescent would be a bad place, but perhaps for the podcast, maybe not, doesn't translate in the same way. No, I think it's important that we talk about the banter of it all, because clearly they're the team's official sponsor now, just sort of unspoken. Dubai Air is gone. Banter is on the kits. Banter is all around the stadium. That definitely a step down from a multinational conglomerate to a startup dating app. But here we are at AFC Richmond.
Yeah, but the show is all about love. So that's what they're selling, Antonio.
The commoditization of love. My favorite thing, Josh.
It's rom communism.
Yes, my favorite thing. So banter is in play here, and for the first time, really, since we had the app introduced, we see it in the wild here being used at least by one character, specifically somebody who we have seen with the online dating apps, and we've talked about their dating life a lot this season, and it's Rebecca. Rebecca has a new relationship that is forming on banter. We don't know. We don't know who that kind of person is. We don't know anything about them. All we know is their username, and their username, just another tribute to rom-coms, a tribute to You've Got Mail. So whether that means anything or there's any deeper meaning, I don't know that there's anything to glean beyond that.
What was the username?
It was like LDN, like London 152, okay. I think. And I think NYC 152 was Tom Hanks and You've Got Mail. So,
got it.
And I think it was Shop Girl versus Boss Girl, if I'm not mistaken, those two comparisons. So those were the usernames. But what Rebecca's getting into here, obviously very, very questionable territory. The power of banter is you don't know who you're messaging with, and you build the connection that is more deep and more real without the, you know, the surface elements of how do you look or how do you look on tumescence. So the question is, Josh, do we care? Or I'm sure we care, but what are we worried about? What are the options here? I mean, the show pretty clearly winks at the possibility that it could be Ted. I know you have some feelings on this.
I don't have like hugely strong feelings on this. So first of all, in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord, where you can not only interact with Wario, but you could also occasionally interact with Antonio. Antonio, I know in the Ted Lasso channel, you had put out the question with the assist from Jen and Aldo putting the poll together about how are we feeling about Ted and Rebecca as an item. With the questions are we shipping it? Effectively, the poll was Ted and Rebecca, yay or nay? Yes, no, or trust the process. Overwhelmingly in favor of trust the process, with a hefty side order of no and a smidgen of yes, is what the post-show recaps patron audience seems to feel like as it pertains to Ted and Rebecca. The thing that I'll say is like, so she's on the phone and we cut from her on the phone, clearly on banter. Like, you know, that's the text. She's on banter. We cut from that to this hallway scene. This is the hallway scene, right? With Ted and Sharon. And Ted is on his phone. Ted is texting somebody. So the connection there very clearly, feels like Rebecca is, bantering with Ted. Or at least that the show has given you the language to like get to that place. Whether or not that is a logic leap is another thing. But I feel like, I don't know, Antonio, there's like no world in which like that is done without the thought of people are going to think that this is Rebecca messaging Ted, right? Like, this is a smart show. The writers are very intelligent. They see how that plays in the edit bay. Like, there's just no world where you are making the show and you are watching that, where at the very least you are not thinking like, oh, people are going to connect that this is Rebecca talking to Ted.
There's no way. Like, there's no way. Like, that is clearly what they were setting up the expectation for. Is it a Ted herring? I don't know. Like, I don't care, quite frankly. I trust the process, so I'm okay with it. I don't need it, and I don't want it. But if they deliver it, I'm confident that they will be able to deliver it. I think
that's where I'm at as well.
We've seen that Ted and Rebecca can be very good for each other, emotionally supportive for each other. We frankly could point to a half dozen examples at this point. That doesn't mean anything about how they need to be together in one way, shape, or form. To be perfectly frank, I'm not sure either of them is over their previous relationship. I think we saw Rebecca's epiphany in the first episode of this season with the Amy Mann playing, that maybe she is. Like, maybe she's finally getting there. But I don't know. Do you feel like the person that she is messaging will be somebody that we've seen on the show?
I feel like it makes sense. It's either someone that we've seen on the show or it'll be like a big casting coup, you know, like it'll be something like that.
Clive
I feel
Owen.
Like.
let me run some possibilities by you that I've got in my mind, and I want to see what you think about
it.
Go ahead.
The only thing I want to add is like, if Ted and Rebecca are bantering with each other, then I trust the show, that the show knows what it's doing. The thing for me is, like, if they're not, and the show has kind of, like, given us a lot of these, like, connectors with Ted and Rebecca that do not feel like they are by accident, but if they are, as you so rightly put it, Ted Herrings, like, just whatever it's trying to, like, waft the scent off of, like, that's really got to be a great payoff. Otherwise, I feel like, I do feel like just like a little bit like loosened around, just a tiny, tiny bit. And like, I don't care that much, but like, it is a little cute. This one was like the one where it's like, okay, this is really cute if it's not Ted and Rebecca. Like, if this isn't Ted on the other side of this, and I don't think it is, because I feel like this is a weird moment to like be almost like too obvious about it without actually showing us. Like, I feel like it almost makes me feel like it can't be Ted on the other side of the banter app, and also him being our main character for us to like not know that he's doing this. Like, I feel like it's too much of a Frosty remove from the guy that you really need to be able to like sort of be in the head of and to like make the suppositions about where he's at, what's his state. This would not be a nothing thing for him to be on banter and for us to not know about it. Feels like a mistake that a lesser show makes. So I don't know. I don't feel like it's Ted, but like, I also do feel like that whatever the banter storyline is leading to, it's just got to land really well. Otherwise, I'm just going to feel slightly jostled.
That was what I was trying to get you to get into when I said I know you had some thoughts about it, because
I feel like lightly jostled and a slight mistrust in the process would occur.
Mistrust the process. Let's not have that be the hashtag.
Not majorly, but like a little tiny bit. And this is like without, like, I'm not really rooting for them. It's not number one on my call sheet, but I feel like they just went there. So wherever they are going, it's just got to be really good. So they just like raised a bar for me is all.
All right, let me hit a couple things. And then I'll see if these things clear your bar or if they limbo under it. First, we've seen Ted texting with his son on match days a lot. We've seen it in the show several times. So it is very easy to assume that that's who he was texting with.
Right.
We see that a lot on the show. Second, we see Ted texting in this episode a couple of times. I don't want anybody in the audience to be like, well, maybe we did see Ted on banter. I don't know why the audience sounds like that. I'm sorry to audience. We saw him texting earlier when he says he starts going through his phone when he's talking about how he doesn't know what to do for Isaac. He says, I need a big dog. And he starts scrolling through his phone. And we immediately cut to Keeley looking at the coffee machines as Rebecca giggles while bantering. Not as much of a smash cut as we see later in the episode, but a direct cut pretty much from Ted playing with his phone to Rebecca giggling on banter. Now, was Ted using banter at that time? I don't know. But if we do find out later that he was, like, I think there's possibilities for us saying we've seen Ted texting and smiling like he was on banter the whole time. So
right.
Let's just say that that's at least in the show a little bit. But let me give you some possibilities here. Okay, let's start with the darkest timeline. And I want to set this up by saying, if you talk about Ted's mission statement at the beginning, when he's talking about where the team's at right now, he says they're in the dark forest. And he says that thing doesn't come along right at the beginning, doesn't come along at the end, it comes along right at the middle. We are in the middle of Ted Lasso's 3-season arc. We had one season, we have a second season where we're at now, and we have a third season. We don't know if the show will go beyond that. We know that that's all that was planned. Okay, so we're in the dark forest of Ted Lasso by Ted's own design, by the character whose name is the title of the show, telling us where we're at. We're in the dark forest. The dark forest option is that Rebecca is matched with Rupert.
Right. Goldie Pohl in the Pusher Recaps Patreon Discord was remarking on this. I didn't really have strong feelings about Ted and Rebecca until I read a review where the reviewer thought Rebecca could be talking to Rupert, and I found that extremely upsetting, and now I want whatever prevents that.
And whatever prevents it. Rebecca could be matched with Will, the kit man, and it is, as long as it's not Rupert, we'll be
good
okay.
For Will. Yeah, good for Will.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really punching above his weight there. Okay, so how do you feel about that?
I would be so mad about it. I wouldn't love it.
It seems exceptionally cruel, does it not?
Yeah, it does. It really does.
We have not had Rupert in this season. We haven't had a big bad in this season, or any kind of real, like, the conflict is much more subtle. We talked about depression being the main villain. We talked about the conflict that is emerging through those kind of things. But Rupert would be, he would certainly be a presence. And he's not the kind kind of guy, and he's such an asshole. He just shows up when you least want him to show up throughout the course of season one. It could easily be that he shows up when we least want him to show up here.
I could imagine it. Like I would hate, when I say I would hate it, like I hate it for Rebecca for sure. And then like I would have to see like how the show handled it. Like it's not like my top option for sure, but
I don't think you'd be using the app.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I don't think so either. It doesn't really track for him. Like he rolls up to a charity event and, you know,
pulls.
Walks away.
Yeah.
Yeah, with like the future mother of his child. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like He doesn't go on banter.
He probably would be on Tumescent, though. I'm just going to say that. but yeah, I don't think he would use banter. But let's talk about some more people who might use banter. What about Coach Beard?
Yeah, you know, Coach Beard's probably using banter.
There is a quote from Rilke which stops Rebecca dead in her tracks. That does seem to be the kind of thing that Beard would be able to pull just out of nowhere.
Yeah, but then it's, again, like, for me, that's too much story for Coach Beard.
you want to hear him as he's walking away say, Lumberjack World Championships, baby.
I know I said this about Roy Kent, but I really mean it about Coach Beard. Like, I've got basically all I need to know. Like, now I just want what I, like, give us, like, the grace notes. You know, like, I don't need Beard and Rebecca to be a thing.
Grace should have a podcast called Grace Notes, by the way.
I wouldn't love that. That's a great idea for Grace.
okay, so you're not loving Coach Beard, but at least it's possible. We heard Beard earlier say he wasn't using the app because Jane would just destroy his phone. Like, I forget exactly what the specifics of that she would do, but Jane is no longer in the picture so far as we know. I have a feeling.
Yeah, she probably is.
She probably is. That's what I was going to say. They seem to be this. The joke is that Beard and Jane are just at each other's throats constantly, but also like can't stay away from each other, whether it's over chess or Stonehenge. I don't think Beard is on the app. And we also heard about somebody who's super picky and probably doesn't know necessarily is not the person who's pulling Rilke right away, but would fit on banter, and that's Nate. What about Nate and Rebecca?
Well, I thought about that actually, and I kind of felt like when they were sort of like doing like the she's all that to Nate.
Yeah, or the My Fair Lady, Pygmalion, you know, Clueless, right?
You know, like, I kind of thought that, like, maybe, like, a final point on the board by the end of the episode would have been, like, showing Nate on banter. And I thought that that would be really interesting. I thought it'd be interesting. Like, I thought that that would be compelling to see, like, that storyline percolate between Nate and Rebecca and where that could potentially go and the things that could like open up for both of them, whether that was like they end up together or it helps them realize things about themselves. But the fact that the show was so focused on other things for Nate doesn't like fully rule him out for me. But my thinking would be more that it's like, it's Ted or it's somebody who we haven't seen much of this season. Somebody who we're not like, who we don't really, really, really live with. I know you have a candidate on board that would like fit the bill of kind of what I'm talking about.
A Rilke quoting, football knowing, potentially intellectual level Rebecca match. What about Trent Crim, the independent?
Yeah, do we need to give Trent Crim a storyline, though?
Do we need to? There's a lot of things that they've already done in season two that I'm not sure we needed, but we probably wanted because they know what people enjoyed. People loved the Trent Crim. They loved the episode with Trent Crim. I think Trent Crim's co-sign of Ted Lasso is a significant portion of the first part of season one. It tells us as the audience, like, okay, here's somebody who is exceptionally tough as a critic, who is not going to pull any punches, who buys into the Ted Lasso way and who's rooting for him. The Trent Crim cosign is a big deal at the beginning of season one for Ted Lasso. It is a major, it pisses Rebecca off. Higgins doesn't even want to read the story because he knows that the Trent Crim sign, the cosign is a massive deal. So I don't know. I mean, Trent Crim as a presence has had a lot more impact on the show than Trent Crim as a character, but Trent Crim as a character has had an impact on the show. So at least it remains possible. It just, I guess it ultimately, It's about what do you want out of the banter match? Like, what do we want it to be? Do we want it to be a life lesson for Rebecca? Do we want it to be true love? Do we want it to just be a comic joke? There's a match in Parks and Recreation, I think, in season two. I won't spoil it, but I will say Leslie Knope, Amy Poehler's character, matches with someone on a dating profile that is supposed to give you your exact soulmate. And who she ends up with, it is played for comedy, in a way that sort of, I think, winked at things that the show or people watching the show thought maybe as a sitcom the show might get into, but they just had a little fun with it. So if we're just having fun with this storyline, I think the Trent Crim match could be fun, as could the Nate match. They could just be fun ways to do this. But if we're talking about what we want out of the thing, there is another version that is a slightly less dark version of the Rupert match, and that's if Rebecca is messaging with John Wingsknight, the person that she dumped the first episode. What does this say if Rebecca decides she wants something more, forms a deep bond with somebody, and realizes it's the guy she kicked to the curb already?
That's cute. You know, I think this, something like that I think could be fun. You know, I think like it's a fairly like low stakes version of it. But I don't hate that. In my mind, I was thinking about like other characters who are firmly on the show, but also are sometimes maybe a little out of sight, out of mind. Like in this episode, certainly was not somebody who was like hugely on the show. Could it be Sam?
It could be Sam. And I don't know about the logic of what I thought the players were on the field warming up when that was going on. I mean, if they were in the locker room, obviously it could be any of the players. And Sam is one. It could be. We had a
just to trace some of it. Like, yeah, there's the scene of Sam and Rebecca in the office together in the very first season, which feels kind of at the time like a gift to like spend some time with Sam Obasanya, but like kind of like also a little jarring because like it's just not like a character pairing that you had thought of at the time, and he's not somebody who gets spotlights at that moment in time.
She thinks he's hitting on her in that episode because he says, "What are you doing tonight?" And he's asking her to come to the team's like curse event, right? Because he feels like it's important that she's a part of the team. He's the one, not Ted or anyone else, that says, "Rebecca, you should be there and you should do this."
Right.
And she thinks at first it's a pass that he's making.
Right. Nora obviously loves Sam. I think there's an argument to be made that Sam doing the rightest thing and taking the stand against Dubai Air inspires Rebecca to do the rightest thing as well. So there's already a way in which they're walking together in lockstep. Dubai Air being literally replaced by Banter on the kit. So I think there's a path there. I would be interested in that if that was where they were going. Like, that's like kind of an outside possibility for me.
I think that's a pretty strong. The only thing that would hold me back from that is I just don't know if the players were meant to be on the pitch when that was going down or not.
Right.
I'd have to go back and look and see for sure. Otherwise, I think it's actually compelling in some ways for the reasons you said, and just because it would present a very interesting commentary, I think, on a lot, on the characters themselves, on where they're at with this. I mean, let's not forget that Keely encouraged all the players to use the app. And that was something that she really pushed hard. Everybody get on there. Everybody use this app. And so is it Sam? Like, is that somebody that, I mean, I think it very well
Tart.
Could be. Jamie Tart is another possibility. Obviously, he's not quoting Rilke, though. So I really don't think it could be him, but
he's somebody who's like trying to like discover himself, and he's somebody who's trying to be different. You know, he had the conversation with Keely in season one about, we just talk about like, about, you know, like about how I don't want the thing and I get the thing, you know, like,
we'll know it's Jamie if he censor the squirrel holding the little nut.
that will be the giveaway.
Yeah,
for sure.
We will know that for sure. And the username doesn't say anything, but the emoji says everything.
Yes.
Yeah. It could be one of the players. I think Sam is probably the best, possible suspect there, for sure. So, if it's somebody that's been on the show, I'm curious what everyone else thinks. Not what necessarily people want, but I'm curious what people listening think. So hit us up
really
in the Discord or tweet
anything,
at us.
I guess I don't really want anything. I am very much like trust the process here, and I'm curious. I'm very curious to see where it's going. And I do think that I assign a bit of myself to like the category of like, I wish that there was like a little bit more that they were doing with Rebecca's story other than it being like all about like finding the love of her life. Is maybe not my favorite use of Hannah Waddingham. That being said, her making herself big was one of the most astonishing things I have seen on television in quite some time.
Yes. An inch perfect gif.
It took my breath away. It really did. The noise she made.
Did you want to invade France afterwards is the question.
Well, it was one of those moments where I was like, ah, yes, Septa Unella.
Yes, exactly. This is you. I know you. I know this version of you for sure.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
So good. So good. And
she's so good.
Extremely relatable moment too, where she sends a very charged text message to a potential mate and then throws the phone aside and shoves a whole biscuit in her mouth. I think that's anybody in this modern era has been there for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So that was very funny.
Very funny. All right, what else from the episode do you wanna get in? You wanna kick at some stuff?
Yeah, let's just collect some things that we haven't necessarily collected. We did talk about the Dark Forest, and I am interested to see if that does trace as we go back over the course of this second season. Once we see it all, would this be the Dark Forest season? Is something very bad going to happen to the team before something very good happens? Are they, instead of relegation, is the story that they're going to stay relegated, and then the great story at the end of the third season is they're going to get promoted, and they're going to get back to the Premier League. Is that it? And then maybe that opens the door for more beyond that once they get back. I don't know. So I am interested to know if this is the Dark Forest season or if that's just a thing that was mentioned as a where they're at in the current time of the season and is not supposed to be seen as a metaphor for this season. Josh, aubergine and snogging, they're fine for Beard in terms of the British versus American versions of English. But Beard will not stand for piles. He will not accept piles. Do you know what piles are, Josh?
I have no idea. Piles of stuff.
Do you want to Google it while we're on so we can just hear you laugh as it emerges?
Do piles Urban Dictionary?
Just maybe do piles, definition, you know.
Piles.
I mean, I don't even think you need to do Urban Dictionary. This is not an urban thing. This is just a thing like aubergine and snogging that has a different meaning there.
All right, so piles. Let's see, what does piles mean? Oh! Huh.
Yeah. Hemorrhoids.
A picture showed up.
I would tell you to do the next one that Beard said he was fine with, but the picture that might show up is different. What about Fanny? Are you aware of the connotation of Fanny?
That's what I'm currently sitting on, right?
That's what you're currently sitting on because you live in America. If you're if you're sitting on that somewhere else, I just learned something about you I did not know.
Okay, I'm not going to look that up.
Yeah, for those people who know. If you know, you know. But the Fanny means something different there. Same general area, I will say, something different. So Beard is up on this lingo. He accepts certain things, but not others.
Understood.
The AFC Wrexham joke, that's a real thing, obviously. You're probably aware of this?
Yes, this is Ryan Reynolds and Mac.
Yes,
that they co-own a team, and I believe they released a joint statement not appreciating
they did
being joked at, and so they asked for some of Ted Lasso's biscuits as an apology.
Yeah, that's funny. I mean, do you think that this is going to lead to not a Mythic Quest Ted Lasso crossover, but is it possible we see Ryan Reynolds and Mac
Ryan
show
Reynolds
up here?
Is harder to imagine, although not totally impossible. But I just feel like his rate, his quote, you know, he could make one bad movie.
It would be Cosmic Gumbo if he showed up. That's for sure.
But I feel like Mac, Rob McElhenney, like I feel like he's in the family, certainly at Apple with Mythic Quest, and also this is sort of his thing. It's like cameoing on the biggest show of the moment, whether it was Lost, then it was Game of Thrones. Like Ted Lasso has come along and it's a contender, but you know, like it is a water cooler dominator in a similar way.
It didn't even occur to me that he is like known for his cameos, but
he does this.
Yeah, he does this. He does this. I hope this does not lead to those two dumb, I almost said the MF word, David and D&D directing a Ted Lasso episode. That cannot happen. I'm out.
I hope not.
That happens, I'm out.
Not.
I'm out. Fully out. Stronger feelings about that than I have about the Fountainhead, Josh.
I'll get a pinch hitter in.
Yeah, we kind of forgot about, Danny kind of forgot about the Iron Fleet. Yeah.
That's fine.
I need it. I'm a wigwam and a teepee right now. I'm too tense.
I hear you.
Oh my God. The Higgins and his wife's meet cute story, a legitimate rom-com meet cute story there.
I love the Higginses so much. He was playing in a punk band with upright bass.
I think he playing air upright bass is my interpretation, which is even nerdier than actually being in a band.
So funny. Yeah. So funny. That he is, got a beer Jeremy dumped on his head.
That is the Jeremy Swift's real life wife. That is, they are actually married in real life.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And I love that the show is using the Higgins family and the Higgins relationship as health. You know, like here's like Higgins is, that family is positive. Like there's good energy there. And I love that the show is celebrating it and showing like this is it. Like it's interesting because Roy Kent and his hilarious, like, Matt rom-com tropey dash to the ground is basically saying like, I'll tell you what they said behind the music, like you have to date your wife, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like that's what Higgins is up to, like dating. It's just such a nice moment in the middle of all that, when the Swifts unite in the ground there and they're are ready to watch the match together. Just fantastic. I love the Higgins story. I'm all in on Higgins, even though he has a gelatinous L4 L5. I laughed every time I heard that line.
Yeah, that was great too.
Not quite as funny as his being a feminine junior late in season one, but along those same lines for sure. Higgins is a great punchline. Great punchline. So is Roy Kent's great aunt Natalie, who, like Wario, would be a mustachioed surprise that would anger him.
Wario. Yeah. I could not get over the way he said Wario.
Wario. Yeah. I also liked we talked about the physical work of Hannah Waddingham. She's got a great moment where she reacts to Nate's terrible initial pitch when they're working him out to try to see about him getting a table, when she's diagnosing how serious the problem really is. She's really looking right at him, and her face says it all, like, oh boy, like this is, we have a lot of work to do. I really enjoyed that. Probably not as much as it enjoyed, not as much as Ted enjoyed learning that Roy dated Gina Gershon once.
Yeah, that was exciting stuff. Yeah. Do you think she's the one who stole his watch?
Possibly. I don't know much about Gina Gershon in that realm. I don't know if she would sell it for drug money or not, but it's possible. He doesn't need it, though, so who cares?
Yeah, who cares? He already has a phone. He doesn't need a watch.
I felt some Mighty Ducks 2 vibes, Josh, where they had to go to the version of street football in order to kind of find themselves and get over their
hype. I was thinking about Rocky 5 when Rocky and Tommy Gunn have to fight on the street.
Also,
a different thing. Yeah.
But you're right. Very similar. Like taking the essence of the thing and stripping it down and putting it out there and reminding you why you love it or why you're doing it. Fighting in the street or, you know, playing hockey, playing street hockey like they do in Mighty Ducks 2 or here, playing five-a-side or playing the way that they were playing. So I like that. You mentioned the Titanic couple, the couple with the stories to the camera. I think if people didn't realize that was a call out, it would have been a little jarring, but it was yet another in the line of the rom-com shout-outs. What other rom-com shout-outs did you track in this episode?
I feel like we've talked about most of the ones that really spiked on my radar. I'm trying to think. It was the pair of Jerry Maguire's, obviously, was very notable to me.
The Jerry pair, yeah. I really like the As You Wish. I mean, he rattles off like three in like 15 seconds there where he's just, I'm just a guy standing in front of a guy asking him to coach, or, you know,
I thought that was my least favorite.
Yeah, not great.
Was the Notting Hill one.
But I really liked how he says As You Wish at the end. Like, because anyone who, I mean, I love The Princess Bride. Love, love, love it. And anyone who knows that movie well knows when Ted was saying As You Wish, he was really saying I love you, Roy.
Yes,
and
that
was great. You had me at coach. That was a Beard's reaction to You Had Me at Coach. Hilarious. Like, just a quick intake of breath. Just so funny. Like, really, really, really funny. Probably the most, like, you get these moments where Beard actually shows, like, a little bit of something. Like, that was really great. So I enjoyed that. Ted says about Nate in the suit, if you're out to describe the truth, leave elegance to the tailor. That's, I think, a quote that's attributed to Albert Einstein, but I'm not sure that I really unpack what it actually means. Does that mean anything to you?
If you are out to describe the truth, leave elegance to the tailor. No.
Okay. All right. We'll move on then.
No.
Yeah. I think it's like a thing that's commonly attributed to Albert Einstein. I don't know, you know, in these ways that Abe Lincoln talks about how, you know, 90% of statistics on the internet are made up or whatever. Like, I just think that, like, I don't know if that's an actual Albert Einstein quote. But I just think that, like, I think that probably that has to do with, like, you know, elegance in this instance. Like, I don't know, like, that it could be like an Occam's razor kind of thing. Like, you know, if you're out to just get the answer, don't worry about what is, like, the most simple theory. Leave elegance to the tailor.
Like, that's not your job.
Yeah, you shouldn't focus on what is, like, the most elegant way to do something. You should just focus on getting it done.
They have someone for that.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not your focus. Get the suit. Tell the truth.
Yeah.
You're not responsible for the measurements.
It doesn't have to be as perfect as it needs to be. You just need to get it right. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, you're not out there to design something that is that. So I don't know how that applies with anything else in the show, but it was an interesting thing for Ted to pull. And if he's pulling that quote, Josh, I think he could pull Rilke for sure. So the fact that he's doing that there, I don't know. It's well beyond his typical realm. It's not a quote from a popular song. It's not a quote from a popular movie. This is a pretty deep cut for Ted. So the fact that he's dropping a deep cut like that, especially in a moment where he's just gone through under pressure and talked about The Shining, I don't think that it stuck out to me. Let's just put it that way. It stuck out
to me. Yeah.
One other thing I want to mention before we get into the needle drops and wrap this, Christo Fernandez, who plays Danny Rojas, did an AMA on the Ted Lasso subreddit this week. That subreddit is kind of a mess
feeling especially cheeky?
He was not. It was pretty cheeked, Josh. That AMA was pretty cheeked. I don't know about that. He did answer a ton of questions, a lot more than the typical AMA, and he did not just want to talk about Rampart like some AMAs have gone off the rails. He was really open to any and all questions, but one of the things his loose lips let slip in a manner of speaking is he seemed to confirm that the second added episode from this season would not be a standalone episode and that they found a way to work it into the continuity. So make of that what you will.
We're flowing now. We're in it. We're in it. So from six onward.
We should not be able to identify what was the episode that was added.
Got it. Okay, cool.
At least according to Christo Fernandez. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Sure. We had a lot of rainbow needle drops in this episode. Swing on a Rainbow, Frankie Avalon starts the episode in a very Nora Ephron-like way, I feel like, in the way that the soundtracks of her movies often trend in this realm. So Swing on a Rainbow there, and then She's a Rainbow, obviously. Probably my single favorite needle drop of the second season, which I feel like has lagged on delivering the big musical moments in the way that season one did so fantastically on a couple of different occasions. This is one that they, I think, really did well with, right down to, as you point out, the moment of the song with the discordant strings playing over Nate. It doesn't sound as happy as the rest of the song there. So I just think that they crushed it with this one.
It was a great episode already. And then I think like the final act catapulted it. Just the way that they played it, like the desperation of like Roy, like needing to get there as quickly as possible. Like you could feel his heart beating. You know what I mean? Like you can imagine like the flushness of your face in like a moment of that. Like, I think it was so evocative, what it feels like to be like swept up in sort of like an epic romance.
Yeah.
It was really, really, really brilliantly done. And obviously the music sells it.
Stripping himself of material goods, giving his entire wad of cash to the scouser that was taking him around in the black cab, whose wife loves cash, so it's just fine. Giving his watch to the rickshaw, the pedal cab driver, the rainbow pedal cab there. So really just kind of stripping himself of all material goods or material needs.
Like the only
getting at
thing
the heart
was-
of it.
The only thing it was missing was like that element of like the ticking time bomb that I feel like so often accompanies these things, whether it's like The Graduate.
He wasn't going to get to the match on time.
But whatever. You know, like it wasn't going to end. Like he would have gotten
there. It was very important that he be there by kickoff for those boys, Josh.
You know, I don't know if that totally holds for me, but I feel like that element for me was like the only thing missing. And it wasn't even like severely missing.
I did love, by the way, that the little kid who you like to tweet the gif of for the Wolverine role, he's not sure. He thinks it might be Roy Kent. Then Roy Kent growls at him, but then he knows it's Roy Kent.
Then he knows it's Roy
Similarly,
Kent.
Similarly,
yeah.
When Roy Kent is trying to present himself as Roy Kent without a ticket, let me in, the stewards will not let him in. But when he says F off, it is you.
It is you.
he has to show that to people to be recognized in public, which I think is a great statement on Roy Kent's public persona for sure.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Anything else from this episode?
No, I mean, we talked about how everything was the references back. I love that. And like I said, Roy's speech about how we don't know and we're on the outside looking in. I think it's a good reminder of where we're all at with Ted Lasso season two and that what we should do is remind ourselves of why we love the show. Go back and watch season one if that's your version of playing football outdoors and you're waiting for season two to deliver like that. Just go enjoy your first season and come back, you know, when the episodes have piled up and you can take in Ted Lasso season two the same way you took it in season one. If you can't do that, you have to be able to just kind of put your phone aside like Rebecca and eat the biscuits and love what you're doing. Like
I'm really excited about where the show could be going. Someone who I trust a lot and someone who I've worked with a little bit over the years, Alex Zalbin over at Decider, I think that he had written online today as we're recording this, that this was actually one of his least favorite episodes, the one we're talking about right now, even though he knows that a lot of people loved it. And he feels that the next couple of episodes coming up are among the best that the show has put out. So I'm intrigued to see what could be coming next. I do think that, like, this episode felt to me like a real, like, threshold to, like, to... Not to get through, like, is definitely the wrong way of putting it, but you know what I mean. Like, I think, like, we cleared something,
yeah.
And so I think, like, there is, like, it kind of feels like we're clear for takeoff at this moment. It's an exciting moment.
We were supposed to taxi for 1 week. We were supposed to taxi for 1 week, watch three episodes, and then take off in week two. We didn't do that because of Apple,
right?
Because they didn't air those episodes together because they wanted to drag out the subscriptions to Apple TV Plus. I'm sure that's why. They extended the episode order. Same thing. They did 100%. It after the 10 episodes were broken. So we did not get to enjoy this the way that we were meant to. And we're bookending this podcast by saying this. So I think hopefully what we mean is what we're doing now is we have taken off and we will benefit from everything that was set up in those first few episodes. The emotional moments, the storyline moments, the plot, the conflict, all of it will begin to pay off here now that we've taken off. And I can't wait to see where we end up.
All right, so next week we are in episode 6 of season 2 called The Signal.
Oh my.
What could that be?
The Signal.
Yeah.
That's where Roy Kent truly becomes Batman. Someone throws the Roy Kent signal up in the sky, and there we are. Maybe Rebecca loses signal on her phone just as she's about to find out
who
LDN-152 is.
That could be good.
There could be some secret language that evolves between Ted and Beard, too. Beard could give someone the signal. That seems like a Beard thing that he would do.
All right. We need our cryptologists on standby for next week's episode, I think.
Yeah, in case we miss the signal.
Yeah, we don't want to miss the signal.
The thing is, the one signal that I think concerns me is a distress signal, right? Like a flare or some kind of distress signal. Even if a flare is supposed to be a very exciting moment in someone's life when they finally get to shoot it and it amounts to nothing.
Right.
Yeah, a distress signal could be concerning. An SOS, if you will. Ted throwing up that signal to Beard, that could be concerning. So if that's the signal, then I'm not looking forward to it as much, even though I think it will give us good television.
Yeah, the warning sign.
Right.
Is that what's coming? So we'll see. We'll be on hand to talk about it all. Get your feedback in. TedLasso@postshowrecaps.com. Keep the conversation going with Antonio and I on Twitter. I'm at Round Howard. He's at AC Mazzaro. How many Z's? How many R's?
Same as the episode.
Same as what he had said earlier.
Yeah.
When he said it at the start.
If it changes, I will let you know, though.
Please do. Also, you could talk to us in the Post Show Recaps Patreon Discord. Sprawling chat room service is the simplest way to describe it. We've got a Ted Lasso channel where you can talk to us about all things Ted. consider signing up patreon.com/postshowrecaps. Come meet Wario.
Yeah.
He's there. Yeah.
Please, Josh, keep reminding people that you're using intellectual property behind a paywall.
Yeah, he's there. He's there. I didn't say I'm using him. I'm just saying he's there.
Yeah, I can't
he's
get rid there. Of him at this point. He is.
I didn't do anything. He's
infiltrated.
There.
Yes.
He's there. I didn't do it. So consider signing up. We would appreciate it for sure. Ain't telling you anything else.
Wario was in the zeitgeist. He was just mentioned on Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
I know. I just wanted to be clear. We were doing Wario before it was cool.
Yeah, we were. We were.
Yeah. Yeah.
I matched with him on banter like 2 years ago.
I know.
It was very weird. I felt like I was matching with myself, but here we are.
Oh, my God.
All right. I'm finished. No more banter.
All right. Say goodbye to Wario. Say goodbye to Antonio and myself. We'll talk to y'all again next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers.